says it was getting late.
Oh, yeah.
And some accounts said evening. So, when you look at this account, what time was Jesus up on the mountain after he dismissed the crowds? No, it actually says it was at evening. So I'm finding that kind of interesting, and they're like, wait, the feeding of the 5,000 was immediately before this, and it said it was getting late, and some accounts said at evening. But then Jesus, after feeding the 5,000, dismissing the crowds, and going up on the mountaintop, was there at evening. Pretty much, yes. That's the answer I came up with, is because the word that's used for evening can refer to either basically the time from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. as late in the day, or the beginning of the night, which starts at 6 p.m. So if the feeding of the 5,000 was more in the earlier section of that, around 3 p.m., then he would have had a couple of hours, which really, when you think about it, to feed over 5,000 people is still doing pretty good, to feed 5,000 people within a space of a couple of hours and then dismiss the crowds and go up to the top of the mountain before, or to be there by about 6 p.m. But that's roughly the timeline that I came up with that seemed to actually fit the words that are being used. So continuing it with timeline, Matthew and Mark both mention the fourth watch of the night. What time is that?
Best I could find was between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m.
Yes, that's the answer I found as well. So based on that, how long then would Jesus have been praying by himself on the mountain? I can't say there's a specific answer, but I think you can get a ballpark figure.
A long time.
A long time, yes. So if he was up there around 6 p.m. and he had made it, or met up with the disciples in the fourth watch of the night on the sea, then we have a pretty long length of time, as at least 6 hours, possibly as many as, I figured possibly as many as 10 hours that he was up on the mountain praying.
That's assuming he prayed the entire time.
Yes, and we don't know for sure. But that also gives us, I think I left myself about 2 hours worth of time for him to also walk the distance from the top of the mountain and halfway across the Sea of Galilee. So, we don't know really, but it's an interesting thing to think about. Especially when you consider, in all of that time, how much progress have the disciples made crossing the sea?
3 to 4 miles.
Yes. 3 to 4 miles. And at least in the New King James Version, in Matthew's account, says it was about halfway across. So they, in potentially as much as 10 to 12 hours, had only managed to row 3 to 4 miles. And by this point, it is somewhere between 3 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the morning. How do you think the disciples were feeling at that point? Okay.
The disciples were there, but, you know, the apostles were there, but who else was there? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, there is definitely a question of whether they were actually the ones rowing the boat or not, or if it was a hired boat.
It says they were straining at the oars in one account.
Yeah, I was trying to find that. That's because I was thinking that that was implied in one of them. Yeah, and Mark
6:48,
yeah. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. So my guess is that the disciples were taking part in the rowing. And even if it may have been a hired boat, it would make sense if they would be helping in those kind of conditions, and the fact that they were fishermen, so they were used to boats anyway. But so, what kind of a disposition would they probably be in after rowing painfully for several hours in the dark, in the wind?
Not only had they been rowing all night, they had had a hard day the day before already.
True.
They had had the whole day with the 55,000 and everything went on prior to that. And
yeah.
And now they're rowing all night. They're very tired, to say the least.
Yes, they're exhausted by this point, I'm sure. So, when you consider that, does it make sense that the disciples, when they see Jesus walking across the water in the middle of the lake, in the dark of the night, might think that he was a ghost?
If you believe in ghosts.
If you believe in ghosts, yeah. So did they recognize who he was when he came? No, not at first. There's one point that is stated in Mark that I find really interesting. In that same passage that, or same verse that I had started to read earlier, at the end of that verse, and about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. He meant to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out. Why would Jesus mean to pass them by? If Jesus really intended to just walk on past them, it seemed really strange to me. Especially when you consider he walked on past them, but he made sure to walk close enough that, as dark as it was, they wouldn't be able to see him. But they didn't recognize him right at first until he called out to them. And especially if you consider, does anybody remember what Jesus states about the works that he was doing in John chapter 5 and verse 36? What was their purpose? Not quite. You can feel free to turn over there if you like. I figured I'd just save time in case somebody could remember it. But John chapter 5 and verse 36.
The four witnesses that God had sent.
Yes. The miracles were done as a witness of who Jesus was and that God had sent him. So if Jesus meant to pass them by, and if he had followed through on that, what would have been the purpose of the miracle? That's why I'm going, I suspect it's not so much that he truly meant to pass them by as he intended to make it seem like it. He just acted like he was going to. So what does this miracle show about him? Okay. He's I don't know, did you say
defying? He's not under this law of gravity in the same way we do.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he's
defying gravity.
Yeah, he's essentially defying gravity. He's Lord over gravity.
God in the flesh.
Yes, it is showing that he is God because he has power over nature. Again, and it's like, oh, deja vu, I'm getting it out of it. I find it really amusing that it's like, okay, the last one that I taught was the calming of the Sea of Galilee when it's a dark, stormy, windy night on the Sea of Galilee. And again, it's a dark, windy night on the Sea of Galilee. So, I guess I get to teach the miracles of Jesus showing power over nature on the Sea of Galilee. Do you have a comment, Neil?
Verse 22 is straightway he constrained the disciples to enter the boat and to go before him to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
They followed his command. As hard as it was, they didn't give up. They said, I'll just, let's go back. Let's just stay with the wind and go back. We'll just go back and go tomorrow. They didn't stop. They kept going and going and going. It wasn't going very far.
But that's a good point.
How much they listened and obeyed his command in that situation.
That's a good point.
And it would have been very easy to say, this is just too rough. Let's just, just give it up. Wait till tomorrow. Wind lays, we ride this wind back. It's taken us 6 hours to get this wind back to shore an hour with this wind. And then we start over again. So the term there, constrained, he laid a get over there on well enough that they weren't going to back down from it.
This is definitely an interesting point. Thank you for bringing that up. But moving on a little bit here.
Jesus seems to kind of set them up for this miracle. In
yes.
a similar fashion as he set them up for the storm on the Sea of Galilee when he was asleep in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
He was asleep in the boat. Just kind of set them up for that miracle so he could demonstrate the power of the elements. And now he's sending them ahead so he can have some time alone to pray, setting them up, setting the stage for this miracle that he intends to do to further demonstrate to them who he is.
Yeah. That is also a very interesting thing that it is pretty clear that he is intentionally setting them up for witnessing this. Especially when you start considering the fact that from, I don't remember for sure which account it was, one of the accounts mentions that he saw them out on the sea. So he was kind of keeping tabs on them from up on the mountaintop. He could see where they were at and see that they were really not making much progress. So when Jesus walks across the water and they see him, they cry out. He tells them, don't be afraid, it is I. Why did Peter want to get out of the boat?
He saw it could be done.
Okay. Yeah, he did see that it could be done. We're actually told a reason.
If it is you.
Yeah, exactly. So he wanted Jesus by that means to prove that it was him. It seems to me a kind of interesting choice of how to have Jesus prove that it was him, because if it wasn't, he's getting out of a boat in a windy, choppy water 3 or 4 miles from shore. So why, if Peter was going to do it, why did none of the other disciples follow it and want to do it too?
You seem to see a pattern with Peter being the impulsive one.
Yes. Yeah, Peter definitely seems to have an impulsive or an impetuous streak to him.
Peter's, the success of whether Peter was going to be able to successfully walk on the water was not just dependent on the fact of whether it was Jesus or not that was out there.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the equation, but it was also based on his own faith.
True.
Because we see what happened.
Exactly. So, besides his impetuousness, what can we learn of Peter's character from this?
That's a good did have to walk to the humans.
Yes. And would that have been easy?
He'd been in the water all his life. He knew he couldn't walk on top of it.
Very true. So he was more willing, based on his trust and faith in Jesus, to get out, essentially, of his comfort zone to be with Jesus, and more willing to go into danger to be with Jesus. So, was he successful?
For a while.
For a while. How far did he get? Yeah, until he began to doubt almost to Jesus. I think, from what I was gathering, it seemed like he actually did get to Jesus. And so maybe he actually got to Jesus, and when he was beside Jesus, what happened?
He took his eyes off Jesus.
Yes. Excellent. And what... And so he took his eyes off Jesus. What did he start realizing? What did he see?
That he needed saving.
Not quite yet.
He was afraid, so.
But why was he afraid?
He saw the wind and the waves.
There we go. He saw the wind and the waves, which caused him to be afraid. And did that cause him to sink? Was it his fear that caused him to sink?
No.
Yes. It was his lack of faith. He began to doubt after he walked on the water, showing that faith in Christ. He took his eyes off Christ and got distracted, essentially, by all the circumstances around him, and started to doubt whether Jesus' power was enough to overcome the power of the elements.
The analogy there is he allowed himself to be distracted by the cares of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he had faith, and yes, it was strong, and yes, he accomplished something miraculous with the help of Christ, but that wasn't enough because he didn't maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
Having to hang on to it and said, yes, all this is going on, but he's still there. And he went to, all this is going on, and what am I doing? He went from Christ is still there to what am I doing? He went from Christ to self.
Yeah. So actually, I want to go back to one thing that I forgot to bring out earlier, is how can we take Peter's example, not quite to this point, but before that, when he's asked Jesus to get out, if he can walk to him on the water, and he gets out of the boat. In that little chain of events there, how can we use that as a metaphor for our own faith? What did Peter wait for before he left the boat?
Approval.
Hmm?
Approval.
Approval? Yeah.
A directive.
Yeah, he waited for Jesus to command him to come. He didn't take the initiative on himself. He waited for Jesus to actually give him his command to come, because he knew that without Christ's authority, he could not set foot on the waves. And similarly, from Romans 10:17, we know our faith is based on Christ's words. And our authority comes from Christ. So if we go beyond the commands of Christ, it's similar to if Peter got out of the boat before Jesus gave a command. And if he had done that, he would have been sunk. So, what does that say about taking our own opinions and going beyond what Scripture tells us?
You should not be presumptuous.
Yes. It's a good way to put it.
It's not for us to tell God what we don't believe.
Yeah. It's not for us to tell God what we believe, yeah.
If it really is you, you'll keep me from any harm if I step out of this boat and he starts climbing. He's telling, he would have been telling Christ, this is what you're going to do because I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way it works. God tells us what to believe, and we do it.
Yeah. And he did make a request of how.
He asked for that commandment.
Yeah, he asked for that command, but he didn't act on the command, or act as if the command was already given until Jesus gave his approval of it. Very good. Alright. So, let me get back to where I'm at in my list of questions here. So, after he begins to sink, what does Peter do? Yes. And what does Jesus do in response? Yeah, and that's another reason that I think that Peter actually got to him, because it doesn't say that Jesus walked over to him to grasp him. He just reached out his hand and grasped him. Why would Jesus rebuke him?
He had what he needed and he gave it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'd already shown that he had the faith to do that, but then he allowed the situation to cause him to doubt. He'd allowed the doubt to come in because he forgot in the cares of the moment that Jesus' power is greater than the power of the wind and the waves. And how often do we let the problems and cares of our life take our eyes off of Jesus and distract us? Ken?
Well, and even later on, Paul tells the Galatians, you ran well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? So even the church of Galatia was off to a good start. Mm-hmm. They allowed themselves to be hindered from obedience.
Yeah, very good. And we also see it back in Numbers with the children of Israel. So when they sent the spies into the land, what did they do? As those spies were searching out the land,
put their eyes on God, start looking at the enemies, how powerful they were, how strong they were.
Yeah, they started seeing how large and powerful these peoples of the land were, and they forgot how powerful God had already shown himself to be, and that God had already proved that he was far more powerful than any of the people of the land.
They pointed that out to themselves, if they listened to themselves, that we're grasshoppers in their sight. They were so large, and we're insignificant insects. We're so poor in stature and size. They were looking at themselves.
Yeah.
It's like the, you know, they could have been very easily been like the chihuahua sitting there barking at the German Shepherd. The German Shepherd backs up because the chihuahua didn't know it, but behind him, there's a bear. The German Shepherd's not backing up because of the chihuahua. But there was a bear, there was no shoulder, but they would, and then they turned tail and ran.
The chihuahua's making too much noise to notice. That's a very good analogy, I like that. All right. So, this is actually going faster than I expected it would. So what happened after Jesus had pulled him back up out of the water? And after he rebuked him, what was the next thing that occurred? Yep, they got in the boat. And what interesting thing happened when they got in the boat?
Wind ceased.
Yes.
Then it was calm.
They immediately appeared at the shore.
And that's the other really interesting one, is while Matthew and Mark both say that the wind ceased, John, I don't think, mentioned anything about the wind ceasing. But he mentions they were immediately at the shore where they were going. I did read one thing that said there, this may or may not actually be saying that they were instantly there, but it could also mean that they went directly there or went immediately went that way. But it does read pretty, in at least some translations, it makes it seem pretty clear that they were had immediately arrived at the shore. So, based on that, how many miracles actually occurred in this story? Three?
Maybe four.
Yeah, minimum of three.
Maybe four, if they miraculously went to the shore.
Yes.
If that was miraculous.
Yes.
Which made me think of something else other than you talking
okay.
about. You gave Jesus a couple hours to walk down from the mountain elements.
He didn't necessarily need it, no.
He could have immediately went from the mountain to walk on the water.
Yeah.
Could have, but
that crossed my mind as well. But I'm just saying, he didn't really have a reason to necessarily. And again, if he was going to perform such a miracle, who would have been the ones to witness that, and what would be the purpose?
Yeah. And that's a good point you're bringing in, Zach, because that seems to always have been the purpose of Jesus performing the miracle was for the benefit of those who can see it.
Yes.
If he miraculously went from the mountain to the water, he served that purpose, so that probably rules that out.
Yeah. Whereas if, in this case, if the after they got in the boat, they were immediately ashore, there would be witnesses to say that Jesus did have the power to essentially teleport them and the whole boat. So, we have Jesus walking on the water. We have Peter requesting and being allowed to do the same. The wind was calmed instantaneously again. And perhaps the boat was immediately at their destination after he got in the boat, potentially covering several miles of water, depending on where they left from. Speaking of which, does anybody know where the feeding of the 5,000 happened or have any good ideas on that? I didn't find much on that. Actually, the one reference that I found was there was a church that there was out near the Sea of Galilee that they say was where that took place, and it doesn't make any sense for it to be that location because it's up on the north side near Capernaum. Going, okay, if they left there to go across the sea and we're 3 or 4 miles out and we're halfway, how could they only have started like 2 miles away from Capernaum on the same shore? So.
Reading was the book that it was the northeast side of Galilee, of the Sea of Galilee.
And that's roughly where that church was located. But again, if they were going across the sea, and it doesn't have to be like directly across from Capernaum, but for them to be halfway with 3 or 4 miles means it probably was actually more on the southern side, is my guess. Or southern half. Right. And then I think Neil.
Philip from Bethsaida.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus asked him to go. Meaning, it's just an inference. that the feeding took place near Bethsaida, because Philip, Jesus sent Philip specifically to.
That is an interesting point. I don't remember that being brought up before. I'm not sure how to reconcile that part. Neil, do you have a comment?
Yeah, the same. Another level of where we put our faith. These men spent all night struggling against the physical world, accomplishing very little. Since Jesus was in the boat with them, when we call it off. Our lives, we struggle all we want. But it's a whole lot easier if you got Jesus on your side.
Amen, brother.
Very good point. So, after they get back in the boat, the wind ceases. Or the wind ceases. Potentially they're at the shore instantaneously. What was the reaction of the disciples after seeing all of this?
They were astonished.
Yep. They were astonished. There's something else that's brought up, particularly in Matthew's account. Yes. Yes.
So these miracles did carry out, but bigger for the purpose was to confirm his was.
Yes. It accomplished its purpose. As far as I could find, and if I'm incorrect about this, feel free to let me know. This is the first time that it mentioned, or that any of the accounts mention the disciples worshiping Jesus. And there's definitely a lot of amazement and other things going on. But this is the first time that they actually mentions that they worshiped him. There were also other occasions like I didn't write down the references. The demon-possessed man at Gennesaret, or not Gennesaret. I'm getting myself mixed up. Was it at Gennesaret, or was it the Gadarenes?
Okay.
Anyway, regardless. I think we know who I'm talking about, even if I don't remember the name of the land where he was at right now. The man with basically a legion of demons, as well as there was at least one leper who were mentioned earlier that they had worshipped Jesus. But this, again, is the first time I think the disciples were mentioned as worshiping Jesus. When the devil was tempting Jesus in the wilderness, in Matthew 4, verse 10, and Luke 4, verse 8, are basically the same thing. What does Jesus state about worship? Yes. So what does this imply about Jesus that he did not reject the worship of the disciples?
He was God.
Mm-hmm. He was God, and that it was right for them to worship him. Unlike so many of the prophets who, when somebody fell down before them, or even some of the angels, when somebody fell down before them, they said, don't. Jesus didn't say a word. He accepted it. Any final comments?
Kind of a question. In verse 52 of Mark's account, what they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. Wait, I think I'd follow up on that. I have one.
Okay, feel free to share yours if you'd like.
Well, again, I'm not sure if I'm right, but it seems like it may be saying that, you know, after having seen Jesus just feed by the thousands, They shouldn't have been at all surprised that he's walking on water, or that he could command Peter to walk on water, or that he could calm the seas, or any of those things. They shouldn't have had any question about any of that, having just seen him feed 5,000. I think maybe what it says, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's also interesting that it kind of foreshadows in Mark chapter 8, after the feeding of the 4,000 as well, and starting in verse 14, and how they had forgotten to bring bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat, and Jesus warns them to watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And they ended that account, under that section in verse 21, and he said to them, "Do you not yet understand?" So that's probably why Mark's bringing it up, I'm guessing, is because he's leading up to that point, too. All right, well, thank you very much for the attention and the comments.